Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity. This is episode 27, and I'm Derek McKinney, and I'm going to take you through this episode, which I'm going to dedicate to digital identity. And there might be some slight overlap from my practicing safe internet sub-series. I don't know. It was only two episodes, but whatever that was, those two episodes, which surprisingly are like the least listened to episodes, and they probably have the most valuable information. So you should go back and listen to those, because those tell you how to like not get your identity stolen. Just saying. But, you know, this one's going to be a little different because I like to think that I have some savvy when it comes to, you know, getting around on the internet and finding my way around online and with gadgets. But, you know, there's still things that you got to be careful of. And there's, you know, this kind of stems from an article that I read a couple days ago that was talking about a pretty big vulnerability that was discovered with Android phones, where apparently the camera could be exploited, but not through the camera itself necessarily, but by an app that you essentially gave permission to use your local storage or your SD card storage. And you give that, just that one bit of permission, and it actually opened up this vulnerability that would actually allow, you know, someone with malicious intent to kick on, without you knowing, your camera or your microphone. And it's a pretty big exploit if you really stop and think about it. And the scary part of it is this could all happen when you don't even know it's happening. You know, this is all essentially behind the scenes, because there's a feature of every camera phone that it has to, you know, make some kind of sound when it's turned on, or, you know, also it needs to expose a light, and it's supposed to be for privacy concerns, so that you can't just, you know, secretly record somebody else with your phone without them knowing. So, you know, when you snap a picture, it's supposed to make a sound, or a light is essentially turned on. I mean, there's obviously ways around that. And I mean, these days there's like 50,000 cameras on an iPhone, and, you know, you wouldn't even know which one to look at, you know, to see if you could tell if it was on. I mean, I know my phone doesn't, unless I turn, you know, some kind of visible flash on, like a light that would glow when you're recording, or, you know, if you're not, you know, it's supposed to, mainly the point of it is supposed to kind of make some kind of sound as if to alert the other person that you're near, that you're trying to take a picture of, that you are doing so, you know? So the thing that is scary about this exploit is this would happen while you don't know, because you don't hear the click necessarily happen. And that's scary in itself, because you could be, you know, in a precarious situation or vulnerable situation. You could be naked. You could be on the toilet. Who knows? Whatever. You could be in a very, you know, compromising position, and your camera could be on and you wouldn't even know it. And the hacker's essentially just, you know, recording that. And, you know, from what I was reading, the company, I guess you could say, or the white hat hacker group, was Checkmarks, I believe it is, with an X. And they basically built this proof of concept app to try to exploit this, to prove that it was a vulnerability, and then, you know, report to the carriers, like Google and Samsung, that this is a problem. And it wasn't just like a Google Android Samsung phone, but it was also a problem on Pixel devices and potentially on any Samsung or Android device. But this was, you know, what they ended up doing was they kind of went and they said, all right, let's try to do, you know, this exploit by having a weather app that's a, you know, just a very generic looking weather app be out there and available to be downloaded through the Google Play Store. And then it gets downloaded. And then what it does is ask for your storage permission. So it says, you know, this application would like permission, yes or no. And you say yes, because it's so common of a request these days that it wants, you know, storage access, that you say, okay. And what happens is it basically has access to like your hard drive. So, you know, essentially this kind of exploit can kind of live on the hard drive and then operate like a virus, because, you know, when the app essentially then goes into this mode where it'll run in the background. So even if you close it, it's still running on the device. And what it's doing is it's actually communicating with a server. So it's making a network connection or, you know, call to a server to say, okay, well, this is what I want you to go get. So go flip on the microphone. So it's able to flip on the microphone. And then it, you know, turns on the camera. And as it records this stuff and it, you know, saves it to the drive, it then uploads it up to the server. And now it's no longer in your control or even what you would, you know, in any way that you would know that it even happened, you know. And it's dangerous, you know, because obviously, like, it's kind of frightening and it's an invasion of privacy. But it also could be that, you know, you say something out of context or you're doing something that you just don't want people to see, you know, like you were just, you know, dancing, holding your phone, listening to music while you just got out of the shower and you don't have any clothes on and you're dancing around or whatever. And this is all basically being recorded without you knowing and being stored on a server. And you know, that's obviously an invasion of privacy and a real messed up thing to do. But fortunately, this company was a white hat hacker, which basically means that they find exploits and vulnerabilities and they don't exploit them for financial gain or any kind of personal gain. They report this information to the companies. And, you know, they actually can make money because a lot of tech companies pay what they call bounties. So they would pay a bounty to this company for finding essentially a bug. And some of these bugs could be worth, you know, $5,000, $10,000. I don't know, maybe $50,000. Who knows? I definitely have seen sites that say what the bug bounty could be for certain bugs, and I've seen upwards of like $5,000. And so that's realistic that, you know, these companies could be finding all types of bugs and reporting them and getting paid for it. And that's essentially how they can kind of make money. A lot of these companies are also security consulting. They create software for helping, you know, secure networks or whatever. And they make their money, obviously, from a consulting perspective, too. But, you know, so this is kind of that example that I was long-windedly getting into about protecting your digital identity and, you know, just talking about digital identity in general. So that's what I wanted to talk about in this episode. So I'm going to get further into it, but that's your scary story for the day, you know, so that'll give you nightmares and also make you put tape over your camera lens too. But I'll get to the digital identity in a minute. So what is digital identity? Well, essentially you have an online identity, which you form when you start joining communities online, you know, like a Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or Instagram or Snapchat, WhatsApp. endless list of social media networks, you know. And, you know, I think the famous ones are the identities of Instagram influencers, you know, so they weren't essentially anybody until they started posting pictures and talking about stuff on Instagram. And then they got a following and people started to look to them for, you know, what they were doing and what they were looking at. And that, you know, turned them into somebody who had influence, and that became their identity, you know. And you also have, you know, another, I guess, word for identity or related to identity is a persona. So a lot of times people have different personas on different sites. You know, Reddit is another site, popular social media site, or, you know, it's a kind of a community discussion board. I think Reddit's great. And there's, you know, actually a Finding Your Identity subreddit that you can check out, where I often will, you know, post one of the episodes are released. So it's another source of information about the podcast. But, you know, I'll engage in discussions sometimes until I'm accused of spamming. But, you know, whatever, I have a handle called Finding Your Identity, and it happens to be the same name as the podcast, but, you know, that's spam. But anyways, I'm just trying to encourage people to go out there and find their identity. And, you know, you can do that by talking, communicate with me, you know, talking to me through the forums. I'd like to hear from people. And I think Twitter's another place. You know, I do have, you know, community discussions there. I've definitely got a following there that I'm posting tech-related articles that, you know, a lot of people seem to enjoy. I mean, I get a lot of likes and retweets and occasionally comments. Occasionally, I go on there and I gripe and I go after a company who did me wrong, and you know, sometimes something comes from it. I was really not happy with Verizon this summer, and so I went after them and got like 100,000 views on it, and the CEO of T-Mobile liked it. And that felt special, but, you know, it didn't really yield anything because, you know, Verizon just doesn't give a crap. They're just going to be the company. You know, they're like Big Bad Wolf or something, you know, but whatever. They have good service, so I got to stick with them. And there's, you know, a benefit sometimes when you're on Twitter to talking or calling out or even just shouting out to a company. And sometimes they'll, you know, maybe they'll send you a coupon or, you know, promo code or something. And other times, you know, I engaged Delta Airlines on Twitter one time because we had a problem with our flight. And I got a different contact number than is normally available, and I was immediately connected to somebody who I could talk to and was able to fix the stuff with my flight faster than me having to wait in a line at the airport to try to fix the problem with the flight, essentially get rebooked. But, you know, that's a a persona, I guess, is what I was getting at. My persona is pretty much myself on Twitter, you know, but Reddit is a little bit of a different persona. Now, I'm doing this persona as podcaster, and this is for the podcast, right? But some people just take on the persona as, like, maybe they're a gamer, you know, video game gamer, or they're into sports, and they talk a little bit differently, and they, you know, have a different kind of connection with people, different friends, you know, so they kind of have this sports persona, you know. Or maybe you're on there because you're really trying to get help for something. You know, there's a lot of self-help groups on Reddit that you can connect to other people and actually, you know, see what other people are going through, you know, for anxiety or depression. And, you know, essentially that's a good community to try to reach out to people to just see what, you know, similar people are going through, similar things. There's definitely help in that group therapy. You know, it's a digital group therapy, but it still counts, I think. And, you know, I think what is kind of powerful is you immediately know you're not alone. in that sense, because obviously there's, you know, a subreddit, thread, whatever, that's been started, and, you know, that essentially has become this channel for other people. And you look at it and it's like, oh, they got 13,000 members of this subreddit. And so that's kind of a positive notion that you're not alone, you know, and you're kind of instantly not alone. I think the internet has that kind of power. It's sometimes a slippery slope or double-edged sword, maybe is a better word, because you might be amongst a group of people and not alone, but you're sitting in your house completely alone. And like, once you turn off the computer, it's dead quiet. And then you really feel, oh, it's really quiet. And I really am alone, kind of such scenario, right? And situation where it comes back. And then maybe you're like, oh, well, I just need to stay online and chat. And then it becomes a problem, you know, and it's like this internet addiction kind of forms, because you have a lot of dependency on communicating with these people, which could be fine, but there is some degree, you know, to some degree, there is something to be said about cutting out, you know, the electronic noise in a sense, you know, or, you know, unplugging, I think, I forget the term, but, you know, essentially unplugging every once in a while, turning the phone off, you know, picking up a physical book and reading it, or, you know, going for a walk, playing with your dog, playing with your kids, you know, it could just be that you need to kind of take that break and unplug from all the digital world, you know, because that could create problems if you just, you know, I mean, first of all, you end up becoming very sedentary, right? So you're not getting up and moving about, and that could be a problem. You could get, you know, you could start to develop health problems from that one. So, you know, you got to be careful there. But sometimes it might be your really, you know, your darkest moment, and you might find the help. I think Facebook sucks. I have said it before, and if I haven't, or if you haven't heard me say it, like, I hate Facebook, like, absolutely hate Facebook, wish it would just go away. That being said, I kind of recognize it as being a tool that you kind of have to leverage. I post my podcast episodes on there so I could spam my friends and family to listen to my latest episode. And I hope it's enlightening them, but I really don't give a crap about any of the stuff that's being posted on Facebook from other people, because I'm just going on there for the 2 seconds to post stuff. You know, like, if somebody reached out to me via text and then we had a conversation and then we shared photos and we shared funny stories, you know, I've got threads of texts with friends or family. And to me, it's like, it's more of an intimate and acceptable way to communicate, right? Because you've engaged them, they've engaged you, and it's pretty open, you know, channel of communication. Whereas Facebook, you're just throwing crap at the wall, almost literally, and you're throwing the crap at the wall just because you can. So you're posting anything and everything, a picture of, you know, a kitten, right? Which is cute, great, but it's probably the 50 millionth that day, you know? And I don't want this to turn into a complete gripe about Facebook, my rant about Facebook, but I don't know if I've ranted in a while, so it's time to rant, you know? But what it is, people are just thinking, oh, well, I'm just going to post everything because this means that people like me because they put a like or a thumbs up, you know? And there's some people who feel pressure to read and see everything that's going on, so they're constantly on Facebook because they don't want to miss something. Because one of the problems is if you've got a lot of friends or followers, which I think, I don't know, it used to be that you could only have, I say only, but you could have a max of 5,000 friends, you know, friend connections. But let's just say you've got 1,000, right? Or even 500, you know, and they're active. Those friends are active. That means that your feed is filling up. Every time you refresh the page, you know, if, you know, 50 things appear and push the next 50 things down, think of all the stuff that you actually missed that somebody posted. You know, you could actually have like a brother, sister, brother-in-law, sister-in-law's pictures of their kid or something, you know, that's on this, on your main feed that you never saw because, you know, your friend that is just a Facebook friend in air quotes because, you know, you happen to go to middle school together and, you know, I don't know, you reconnected for some reason, is posting about their band playing, you know, but they're spamming the crap out of you. Or some idiot has got a podcast called Finding Your Identity, and he's constantly spamming and trying to get you to watch his YouTube channel, right? But now that you've missed the important thing, because who cares about, like, the band or even the podcast? I mean, you should listen to this podcast. Obviously, I'm not talking about myself. Maybe a different Finding Your Identity podcast, but because this one you should definitely listen to and, you know, click through from Facebook if you're on that crappy site. But, you know, my point is you're missing important things because the nature of it, it's just constantly flooded with new stuff. Like, that's probably my biggest problem with it. Like, I had the same gripe with Twitter, except, you know, I didn't care enough to try to find out if Facebook even has this feature, but I like Twitter's that it has lists because I can build my local news lists or my tech lists or, you know, investing advice or cryptocurrency or politics. Like, I mean, that list I basically deleted after, you know, the Trump election because it doesn't matter who you like. It's just ridiculously noisy. Just, it's redundancy. Well, the problem with the political news climate right now is just redundancy. That's annoying because nobody wants to hear the same crap over and over and over and over and over and over, and it's barely even spun to sound any differently. You know, I got two rants in the course of like 5 minutes. Political, you know, news outlets, political stories, and Facebook. But that's one of the things. Like, you're going to find that anywhere. Like, Reddit's going to be like similar, but one of the things I like about Reddit is you've kind of got this, this filter that's trending or hot or, you know, or controversial, like where those filters actually like keep things up there for the most part. So you could refresh the page and maybe like two more things would pop up, but you can actually scroll through, you know, 100 stories or something like that. And that order doesn't necessarily change, and it's being pumped up and driven up by the community of people who are looking at this stuff, you know? So it's kind of, you know, it's being cultivated, but by the community. And I kind of like that feature because it makes it so that, you know, things that are kind of important generally kind of bubble up, but a lot of times it's just, you know, mind numbing, like, I just want to like space out for a little bit and look at some funny stuff or interesting stuff. And that kind of stuff kind of bubbles up, you know? Where Facebook, it's like the picture of, you know, the squirrel, I don't know, like 100 times or whatever, because Aunt Sally keeps posting that. Maybe that's not realistic, but whatever. My point is, that's what it really bugs me about Facebook and why, I mean, I just kind of hate Facebook because of how intrusive it is and how they really don't care, you know? Like, one of the things that bugged the crap out of me is when I found out that when I got my Samsung, I think it was the Note 8, that it came preloaded with a piece of Facebook software that wasn't called like Facebook or anything related to the word Facebook. And it was essentially their thing that allowed them to still track what you were doing on the phone, but it was disguised. And you had to actually go into your apps and then you had to, go into the menu, check off a box that said show system apps. Then you had to find this obscurely named application and go out of your way to delete it. Or I don't even think you could delete it. I think you had to just disable it, you know, and eliminate all the permissions it had just because, you know, that was how Facebook could still, you know, initiate tracking on your phone. Like, that's it. Like, to me, that's like, you went too damn far. Like, just get the heck out of my face. Like, Facebook, I think I need to take a break. I am just, like, fired up. I'm like, yeah. All right. I'm going to talk about how to help protect your digital identity in a minute. I think it's actually really hard to protect your identity because online, because, you know, your digital identity is, it's like in stone, essentially, because, you know, when you get on these big social networks, in order for these things to operate efficiently and deliver stuff fast enough, there's redundant backups all across the US, potentially the world, of servers essentially storing, you know, the same information. It's just how they, you know, it's how it's operated so that it can kind of deliver things faster and more efficiently, which essentially means that a lot of times any of your data, it could live in many places, you know, at the same time at once. And the things that I always kind of, you know, worry about is like, oh, you know, if I delete something and they say, oh, it's not really deleted, it's queued for deletion, or, you know, it's actually told, you know, Facebook basically came out and said, no, we don't delete stuff. Like, nothing will ever be deleted, you know. So they've just got server farms, you know, just massive million square foot facilities with giant computers that are servers, you know, and spending spending away our future, because the greenhouse gases produced by the air conditioning units that have to run that place are just insane. But this is not anything I can confirm or deny, so, you know, don't take me at my word at it. But that's how they have to operate. I mean, a server logically is a computer. It has to be cooled. You have to have a lot of servers if you're someone like Facebook or even Google. You got to cool them. Air conditioning is a cooling method. You know, potentially you put it inside of a mountain, maybe underground, and it kind of lends itself to cool off, you know. But you still need electricity to kind of run that. And maybe you've got a solar farm next door, and that's helping to power it. But, I mean, how much is it really saving now, because the efficiencies haven't completely been gained from solar power? But lots of tangents today. This is exhausting. I didn't sleep much last night anyway, so this is a roller coaster. But what I'm saying is, it's hard to actually delete yourself online. Now, I read an article, a Wired article, a couple years ago, and it was kind of fascinating. It was a very good article. I can't remember the name of it. But it was basically this guy who decided he was going to, it was kind of like a contest, but he had to try to stay off the grid and essentially go undetected. And then he kind of got a head start. So if I remember correctly, he had like a week or 7 days, same thing, right? To go off the grid, right? So he had to actually find a way to disappear. And then once he was off the grid, you know, he still had to do certain things. Like he still had to go on the computer to check in, I think, or I forget what exactly the details were. But, you know, what was fascinating about it was he had to try to live in this society. You know, maybe this is 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I can't remember exactly when, but he had to try to live off the grid, and while doing so, not get caught, not be found by somebody, you know. And so, you know, he had a recognizable face because I think, you know, he was kind of a well-known person either through Wired or as a writer or editor in the tech community. Can't remember exactly. Obviously not long-lasting inside of my head, but, you know, I forget whatever his name was, but not the point. He actually, I think he made it like longer than he expected, but, you know, not as long as somebody would have liked. It's not like he went years, you know. I think he might have went a couple months, and then somebody actually found him, and, you know, I don't know if they got a reward or something like that, but they definitely got kind of some bragging rights. But it was kind of interesting because, you know, this guy, ahead of time, he had to kind of had to think a little bit as to how he was going to, you know, operate. And he only got a certain amount of cash too, because that was the other thing. You know, he had credit cards, but it would have been silly for him to use them. He also had to, you know, be careful. Like he had to not use traceable devices like cell phones that had location. When he did go on a computer, I think what he actually did was he said the first thing he did was because he was in California or somewhere on the West Coast, and he drove to Las Vegas and he rented an office, I believe. He rented like a small office space and he set up a computer there. And then so whenever he wanted to go online for something, he actually would remote from one computer, he would connect remotely to this computer in this office. But going into it, he was using like VPNs. Those are like the virtual private networks. You probably heard of NordVPN, and I don't know. I'm trying to think of what, I mean, I definitely know of the ones that like I use, like private internet access. There's NordVPN. That's probably the most popular right now because they're blasting like crazy. I mean, Symantec and McAfee, I think both have VPNs that they offer. You know, you can pretty much find by searching VPN a dozen, more than a dozen, probably like, you know, 50 VPNs are going to pop up that are all going to be promising things. But I think I mentioned this in the Practicing Safe Internet episodes, that you want to be very careful because you don't want to use a VPN A that tracks any or logs any of your traffic or any of your activity, and B is known for like giving it up, you know, if the, you know, government comes knocking. So, you know, a VPN that says they don't log anything doesn't have anything to provide. If somebody came with a warrant and said, we want all your logs of this per, you know, this IP address or whatever, there's nothing to give because they just don't save it. But, you know, so this guy, he essentially was, you know, remoting from one computer into a computer where he physically wasn't at that computer. And then from that computer, he was going through another set of like proxy servers, like VPNs, out to wherever he was going to go. So, you know, he was trying to operate stealthily. And I think his undoing had to do with money, because I think he ended up having to use money for some reason, or use a credit card or something. Like I can't remember exactly what happened. I'd have to actually go back and look, but the concept of it was interesting, because this guy tried to essentially wipe himself off the internet and then remain anonymous. And it was practically impossible to live in this day and age and do that, you know, and it kind of proved that point. And, you know, I don't know that many people would even want to do that, because that'd be pretty hard, you know, but it is an interesting concept to think about, like what it would take. I mean, other than, you know, moving to be a bushman or a bushmaster, bushman, man of the bush, in the bush country, whatever you want to call it, mountain man, survival man, but basically go into the middle of nowhere and completely off the grid and not have any reliance on technology. And I'm not talking about Amish. That's a different talk altogether, a different discussion. But, you know, essentially you get a cabin in the woods and you try to live out the rest of your days living off the land, living off of, you know, hunting wildlife and fishing and, you know, chopping down trees and, you know, keeping a nice big wood pile and burning wood and just surviving, essentially collecting nuts and berries. There's a movie called Into the Wild, which is based off of a book called Into the Wild. And you know, I only saw the movie. I didn't know about the book, but it was kind of a fascinating story about this kid who decided to go off the grid, except his dream was, I want to go to Alaska and I want to go live there all by myself and survive. But he lived in like New Jersey or something like that. And he basically just, it was a little extreme and dramatic. He like drove his car off or he pushed his car off a cliff with him. He wasn't in it. And then it caught on fire. And then he like left and started hitchhiking. And he basically went all the way across the country. And then he ended up in Alaska. This movie has been out for a while, so spoiler alert. You know, if you don't want to know how this ends, then you should fast forward about 2 minutes. But he dies because he was living in this abandoned bus, school bus, and he ends up actually eating some plant or mushroom that was poisonous. And it looked very identical to something else that wasn't poisonous. And he even had like a book that was like a survival SAS survival guide or something. He just made this, you know, mistake. And then when he tried to go for help, he couldn't get across this river and he didn't make it, unfortunately. And then I read recently that this woman tried to do something similar, not similar, but tried to go to that bus to go to the spot of the where they filmed the movie. And apparently she actually drowned because she got swept away in the river because the river got really high. And if you saw the movie, you saw that the springtime melt actually caused that river to get crazy because when the kid actually was going there, the river was really low. But apparently when the thaw happens, then that river just gets out of control and you can't just walk across it. So that's an example of going off the grid in a very, very extreme way. Now, you know, in general, I think if you do stuff in moderation, such as, you know, decide when to kind of cut the cord on your phone. I mean, if you have an internet router that actually lets you schedule when the internet would turn off, you could do that to yourself. I mean, I have it set for my kids to turn off the internet at a certain time because I don't want them on the internet, you know, after bedtime when they should be sleeping. So I, you know, find their devices on it, put them in a little group, and it automatically disconnects the internet to those devices. You could do it to yourself after 10 p.m., no internet, you know, but it's probably a better habit to build to be able to do it, you know, under your own volition. Like if you have enough self-control to do that, that's kind of a stronger message you're sending to your brain and to yourself. But, you know, it's hard because there's a lot of things that happen now because you're tied to your phones, work-related, family-related, you know, that you kind of need your phone at least around because it could be critical. You could have a sick relative, sick mom or dad or something like that, and you need to keep the phone on because you never know when you're going to get a call, you know. But that's not to say that you should sit there on Facebook waiting for the call while you're on your phone. You know, you put the phone down, do something else, and that's just kind of a better use of your time. You know, like I have the Kindle app on my phone. I also have a Kindle, and I really enjoy reading books that way. I sometimes think I can consume them a little bit quicker that way. Partly because I kind of like the idea of not necessarily knowing where I am in the book. So you kind of get this feeling of, you don't know the story's coming to an end right away because you can kind of know, you know, it may say I've got 10% left in the book or something like that, but you can turn that off so you don't see anything. So you could just be reading and you don't get this sense like, I have to anticipate that, you know, the book is coming to a close, you know, so you don't have this, you know, this feeling of, you know, looking a little bit closer to what's happening. You know, I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at is it's like a surprise, or, you know, you, once you remove that anticipation that this thing must be wrapping up, you know, you don't get like as kind of worked up about it in a sense, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one, but I feel like it is a different experience. Bottom line, when you're reading on like a Kindle or whatever digital reader device, you know, you're going to have a little bit different experience just because, I mean, A, you're not holding a physical book. B, like I said, you know, you don't necessarily know when the end is coming up or how many pages are left, you know, and it's portable. That's pretty convenient. But I do occasionally like to grab a book that is a physical copy of a book and read it that way too. You know, sometimes I'll have like a Kindle book that I'm reading and I'll have a different book that's a hardcover book that or a paperback or whatever that I'll be reading. And I kind of like that. Like sometimes it's just nice. And you know, it's not bad for the eyes. Although one of the nice features about a Kindle is that you can flip the color contrast so that it could be, you know, a dark background with white letters that are lighter. It's actually a little bit easier on your eyes, especially if you look at a computer all day like I do, because I work on computers or, you know, I'm a developer, so I'm always staring at code and stuff. Anyways, this episode is full of tangents. This episode is brought to you by the tangerine, because there's so many tangents, and that was completely unrelated, and ironically a tangent in itself. One of the things about the Kindle that is a double-edged sword is I get insights, notifications about my reading insights. So it's, you know, it's saying, hey, you've read, you know, 20 weeks in a row and 2 days in a row, you know, keep up the good work. And like, I think my Kindle is saying, like, I've read 56 weeks in a row, but only one consecutive day, because, you know, I think I picked up the Kindle, like, and I was reading like 2 days ago or day ago or whatever, and then I missed yesterday, and then I picked it up today, and so there's that gap. So all of a sudden my weekly consecutive goal or streak is shot. And there was a point where I was just trying to beat the streak. So I was like, I don't even care if I read one sentence, like, I'm gonna keep the streak. And, you know, I was able to go like 20 weeks in a row where I read every single day, like, or at least I picked up the Kindle and I read a few words, but I kind of stayed on top of it. And then I started to go crazy, because then I'm like, am I just going to start opening this app? Which I think sometimes I'd open the app and I wouldn't even look at the freaking thing, and I'd hold it open for a few minutes, and then I would just close it, just because I'm like, okay, there, I made the Kindle happy. Like the Kindle's keeping tabs on me, and I'm just like, this is insanity. You know, like, I mean, it's like the fitness trackers that are telling you you need to move because you haven't moved in 10 minutes. And it's like, I work at a desk. What the heck do you want me to do? Like, I wave my arms around, you know, like, okay, does that count? No, I didn't get up. I didn't, you know, do Pilates and crunches and squats, you know, and make all my coworkers look at me funny, you know, so I don't get my 10 minutes. Crunches and squats awkwardly in the middle of the office by my fitness tracker. What are we up to, 3 or 4 tangents now? I don't even know anymore. I just lost count. I'm going to go on a tangent about having tangents. Okay, so digital identity. Maybe we can start talking about that at some point, or maybe we have been. I think this is all related to it, because, again, there's like this figurative identity that I had with this Kindle, where, you know, like, I felt like it was ruining my ability to read or something, because I didn't read 2 days in a row. Now I'm like, okay, I at least want to make sure I read once during the week, because I don't want to lose that streak. Cause I'm like, hey, I've been able to do this for like 56 weeks straight, right? Which is like over a year. And I'm like, I'm not going to let that get screwed up. So I'm going to open this stupid app up. I mean, like, I've been reading these books, the Rising or Red Rising books. So that's pretty easy, because those are good books. And like, I'm often like, oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom and take a poop. So I'm going to read for a little bit, you know, but so, hey, I kept my streak going, you know? So it's interesting to me, because it's not something I would have thought about 10 years ago. You know, this, like, trying to keep my damn reading streak alive. But it is what it is. That's the digital world we live in, you know. And then I look at Twitter, how, you know, I've got this, you know, small following, like 10,000 followers, that I somewhat acquired randomly, like, throughout the years, you know, a few thousand in a questionable way, but, you know, that was just, you know, a few thousand, but then, you know, there's definitely several thousand who I've gotten as new followers in the past couple of years that have kind of helped my numbers grow, you know, to over like 10,000, I think I'm at 10,700 or something like that. And a year ago I was at like 9,000, you know, but it's because I've kind of leverage some automation software, my podcast, to actually drive traffic to Twitter to actually drive traffic from Twitter to my website, but also in the reverse, because sometimes people see stories on my website that are tech stories and then they end up back at Twitter and, you know, thing goes full circle. And then anything I do is helping to kind of push the podcast too, because I want, you know, I've got it all over my personal website. I also am posting it on Twitter, and I get people who are interested in the podcast that kind of, I mean, nobody's left any comments, which, like, you know, bugs me a little bit, because I love to get feedback from people about not even if it's like, hey, your podcast sucks. I mean, that's fine too. But like, what would you like to hear? You know, because I kind of, you know, shoot from the hip to some degree. Anything that's loosely related to finding your identity, which in all actuality, everything helps build your identity. So I can talk about anything. Next episode, volcanoes. Now, you know, I just think that this the concept of digital identity is interesting, because once you fall into it, it's like you're trying to maintain it. It's like the Kindle streak in a sense, because you almost feel like you're going to let people down, right? Like, I feel like if I don't keep up appearances on Twitter, I'm going to let people down. You know, some people feel like if they don't post stuff on Facebook, they feel empty inside, you know, like they just murdered a kitten or something. But it can be sad, I guess, because they don't feel like they've been acknowledged, you know, or they post stuff on there and they don't get a single like or comment, and they just have a terrible day that day, you know. Another reason why I hate Facebook. But it's all in this effort to really just kind of, I guess, you know, maintain that identity, build that identity. And it's all online. Now, what I was trying to get to before all these tangents got in the way was how to protect that identity. And in all honesty, it's hard to protect. I think that's what I started saying, is you can't really delete yourself. So everyone always says, be careful what you put online. But sometimes it's like 2 o'clock in the morning and you're like, I wanna, you know, go on a rant about how much I hate Facebook on Twitter or Reddit or whatever. And then you put a whole bunch of crap out there, right? But then that's out there. And then a future employer potentially can go see this and they're like, oh, wow, like he just went and, you know, said some pretty messed up stuff about Mark Zuckerberg or whatever. I don't know. I mean, like, to me, it's a waste of effort. So I wouldn't do that, but there could be somebody who does that. And you know, my point being is it's out there then forever, right? Because you kind of posted it. And as you've seen in the past couple of years, there have been tweets put out there and then deleted almost immediately, but somebody got it because the way that Twitter works, it's immediately like spread out through the entire network. And if you're following somebody, it's in your feed. As much as somebody tries to delete it, there's that slim chance that it shows up in someone's feed and then gets screenshotted or, you know, saved offline or copy pasted or whatever. Most of the time it's screenshotted, but then that's it. Then it's forever out there, because that thing gets shared as a screenshot from somebody else who shares it with somebody else. It's on Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, media outlets, everywhere. That's it. You can't escape it. So it's like, you know, for whatever reason, in this day and age, people don't think before they talk or think before they type, whereas you were kind of growing up thinking, you know, or told you got to think before you talk. And still people don't necessarily do that. But I think way less people think before they type and hit enter, because people think that it's just digital and that you can retract it or pull it back. But that's not the case. That stuff is spread like wildfire so fast. And then you're just, you know, forced to backtrack, you know, and then talk it back like it's going to help, you know, whereas you'd be better off just owning it and being like, yeah, you know what? I do think that, you know, Facebook sucks. And I do think that it's kind of hurting society. Like, and I think that, me personally, this podcast guy, Derek McKinney, like, I think that the Facebook effect or the Facebook, whatever, Facebook, I feel like it's actually like hurts society. As much as they try to say, oh, I connected with long lost relatives, or oh, we were able to get that Amber Alert out and then save somebody. Okay, so that did some good things. And I'm not saying that wasn't good, and not trying to take away from it, but the people who it drains the life out of, because A, they're completely 100% immersed in it and can't escape it, and B, you know, because they live and die by their comments and their likes and what other people post. And then, you know, you got those, I sigh because I can think of so many people where you just go on and all they're doing is talking about how great things are, right? Which is great. But if you're having a crappy day, you don't want to see somebody else having this great day, or that's all they post, because that's their persona, is here's my happiness of all my vacations and life is great, but they never go on there and talk about having a bad day necessarily. So like, you don't feel so great about yourself because you're thinking they've got the best life and mine sucks or whatever, you know. Or you can't have kids and they're talking about all their kids and all the things the kids are doing and you just feel crappy about it, you know. And because of the nature of it, it's like, you don't, people just feel like you can't just unfriend people or something, you know, where I unfriend people. If I'm looking at this thing, I'm like, man, I'm really tired of this guy constantly posting his podcasts. I'm going to unfollow him, you know? And I don't think you should unfollow me though, just so you know, but that's friends and family who most likely feel like they have to continue to follow me and just take my stuff, which, okay. So once a week I post it, you know, or once every other week, if I'm on a lazy streak for doing the podcast, which apparently seems to be the case, because it's been, 11 days since my last podfession. Yeah, this has been a fun one, right? We're at 50 minutes, and I don't even think I've said anything important. Let's see. I've said this before. Use a VPN just because it's good. You can listen to the other podcast about why it's good. No, in seriousness, you know, a VPN is one way of protecting your privacy. I think you just got to be smart with how you post stuff online. You also got to be careful, I think, about posting pictures of your children, because that stuff could easily be picked up. You know, use something that's private, like Google Photos or an alternative that you can share with specific people, you know, specific family members, and then you can, you know, make sure that those pictures stay just amongst the people that you would expect. You know, you post them on Facebook and you've got a friend of a friend of a friend whose feed that shows up in. You have no control over who's seeing pictures of your kids in the bathtub, you know? So like, to me, like, you've got a bigger responsibility to protect the identity of your kids over yourself, you know? But also, you know, that one drunken night that you had at the casino and you took a bunch of photos and had a hangover movie type scenario, don't post those pictures either, man, because that stuff will be out there and lingering forever, you know? And don't go posting a podcast online where you're ranting about how you hate everything, because that'll be there forever, you know? And, you know, I am living and dying by that hope that I will be remembered as the person who ranted about Facebook. Oh, it's not the first time, so get off my back. It's a crappy platform anyways. Like, it's really got not much of a nuance to it. It's very redundant, if you haven't noticed. A lot of social... I liked Reddit for the simple fact that it doesn't feel redundant. I mean, as much as it's similar, it doesn't feel redundant. Or it doesn't feel as bad. It doesn't feel as much redundancy to it, if that makes any sense. What else can I say about digital identity? Be careful where you put your credit card information. That should be a given, but, you know, or on, you know, on the flip side of that, only use your credit card to make online purchases and not your debit card. And especially if you can't avoid it, don't put your checking account information online. Sometimes it's hard to avoid if you're using it online to, like, you know, connect it to pay a bill or, you know, essentially to pay a bill. That gets tricky. But no, you should kind of have at least a log in your memory of where you've basically put that information out, because if something happens, you got to figure out how to trace it, you know, back to the source of where the vulnerability was. As we saw, I mean, it still happens, but it seemed like this major wave of Home Depot and Target and Barnes and Noble and Lowe's and Kohl's like had data breaches, and you had cards for all of them, or not necessarily cards, but your credit card was on file with all those companies. And then next thing you know, I think I have credit protection for the rest of my damn life, because I've had so many companies that I've made transactions with have data breaches that they had to give me credit monitoring for at least three years, and that stuff just compounds. And now it's like, I don't even know when my credit monitoring ends because there were so many data breaches. Not a bad thing, but kind of messed up, because I kind of had this expectation that these companies knew what they were doing and that they would, you know, keep stuff safe, you know, or don't store it if you can't keep it safe kind of situation. You know, like I always operated off of, I used to sell online, right? I used to sell on eBay. I always operated on this mindset that I'm going to let a payment processor handle that, specifically like PayPal was my payment processor, because I remove my liability of handling the payments. Yeah, I got to fork over 3%, but it was a better way to pay. And whenever, you know, for the longest time, whenever I was shopping online, I would use PayPal because I already knew I could have the same credit card associated with PayPal. And that's their job. That is the company's, that's the business they are in, is protecting and processing payments, but also protecting the payment information. I don't have to have the small mom and pops, you know, holding onto my credit card info. I can use PayPal, or even Home Depot or Kohl's. Like, you know, I can use PayPal as my payment option. Let them handle the payment processing. If you funnel it down to, you know, the handful of payment processors, and that's their only job, is to keep that stuff safe. But Home Depot doesn't have to worry about keeping payments safe. They can focus on selling you Home Depot stuff, you know, the lawnmowers and nuts and bolts. That, to me, makes much more sense. But you got payment processors have fees. You want to cut the fees. Home Depot doesn't want to pay 3 cents per transaction, so they have their own payment processing. Still has to pay, you know, like if I use a credit card, there's still a processing fee. But anyways, I think we could fit in one more tangent, right? We're up to like 5 now. Smart food popcorn. Why'd you change the container or the package? I liked how it looked. I really don't care about that, but it sounded funny. But there was some product that I was using recently that changed the look, and it bugged me. But it must not have been that important. And I'll save you from another tangent. I think I covered everything I wanted to cover. And we're like almost at an hour. Maybe I should squeeze in 3 more minutes, you know. Actually, no. So that would be messed up. So we'll just say, well, this wasn't an hour. It was only 58 minutes, but... Okay, thank you for listening to Finding Your Identity, and I hope you're finding out how your digital identity needs to be protected and how you got to nurture it like a little baby, your little online identity, you know, because it's fragile, because it's probably the easiest way to get your identity stolen, you know, is through missteps on the internet, you know, and you just got to be careful. You know, as a side note, you also got to be careful because, you know, I've got a Twitter picture out there or a Facebook picture out there, and somebody could take that picture and then, you know, go create a profile somewhere else and say a whole bunch of crap. And, you know, they can go on, you know, they could take my Twitter picture and go create a Facebook profile and then talk a whole bunch of crap on Facebook that, you know, about somebody, and then, I don't know, somehow get friends. They could just create a fake profile of me and then become friends with people that I know and then start talking a whole bunch of crap and then end up, you know, sullying my good name, man. That could be messed up. And, you know, don't get any ideas, because now they've got, like, you know, ways to kind of prevent that, because you kind of do this two-factor authentication stuff, or MFA, as they call it, multi-factor authentication. So that can kind of be prevented. I'm sorry, we're going to go to 60 minutes. It's just going to happen. But you got to be wary of stuff like that. You know, somebody could go create a fake profile for you, dating site, social media site, you know, news sites. I don't know. You know, that people hack into you to Twitter and Facebook, and then, you know, especially Twitter, like where I think like even the CEO of Twitter's account was hacked and a whole bunch of crap was posted onto it. And then he had to like regain control of it. But, you know, that's why the two-factor authentication, multi-factor, MFA, that's important. Always enable that stuff. I've got it for everything that I can get it for, because it's just smart. I mean, it sends you a text message, an email, gives you a code. You log in, it says, hey, somebody logged in from this IP in this location. It just keeps you aware of what's going on, because it's just so easy for hackers to kind of sneak around behind your back, you know, and do stuff on your account. So you just got to be careful. Okay. I think that's good. I think I just breached an hour, so you should be sleeping by now. Hopefully you're not driving, because that would be just dangerous, and that could really ruin your in-person identity, which you should try to protect. You know, screw your digital identity. Protect your in-person identity. Also, go to the library. You know what? Like, I just went to the library the other day. I had like to wait for a little bit for my daughter to finish gymnastics, and I had, you know, like a half an hour, and I went to the library and I picked up the book that I was actually reading on my Kindle. I picked up the physical book, and then I sat there and I read that book for a half an hour, and you know, it was nice. It's a library. It's free. And you can sit there. You can even check books out. It's also kind of nice because it's, you know, you're forced to be quiet because it's a library, and it, you know, you can unplug and you can actually enjoy yourself. And so, yeah, go to the library every once in a while. Go to the park every once in a while. Do stuff for yourself. Go find your identity, man. All right. Thank you for listening to Finding Your Identity. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you listen again in the future, because this is the 27th episode, and I hope that this wasn't the last, because I went on so many tangents, you're just like, I can't take this guy anymore. He's a nut. All right. Anyways, I misplaced the key to the facility for all the non-listeners, so they're kind of pissed. All right, until next time, this is Finding Your Identity.